Welcome to BIC Magazine's Industry Roundtable, the program where business and industry connect to share topics and ideas that move the world's energy. BIC Magazine's Industry Roundtable is brought to you by BIC Recruiting, the leader in energy market recruiting.
Welcome to BIC Magazine's Industry Roundtable. This is Mark Peters. We're hosting this first podcast on workforce development, and we have some guests that have great insight into the issues that the refining, petrochemical, industrial development is having in developing their workforce. Craig Beskid, the executive director of East Harris County Manufacturers Association, are better known as ECMA. Brandon Mabel of Performance Contractors and chairman of the board of directors of the Associated Builders and Contractors of Greater Houston. James Griffin, senior VP of Petrochemicals, Energy and Technology at San Jacinto College. Let me introduce myself. I have been a publisher in the oil and gas industry, petrochemical industry, for the last 35 years, and one of the both upstream, midstream, downstream, and an offshore magazine. One of my primary interests over that time has always been trying to help industry get the talent they need for the developments that are needed in the industry. The U.S. right now is in a unique position in that through the shale revolution 5-6 years ago, we have become the world's low-cost and swing producer for crude oil, and then the development of the shale natural gas has really helped us in the feedstocks into the petrochemical industry. So we have pretty much all segments of the industry in the last 5 years, where the downturn in oil prices forced oil companies to become a lot more discerning in their investments. Even the offshore industry is returning to profitability. So what we're looking at is increased profitability in the industry, increased demand worldwide. We're looking at cyclical things that are going on with the industry as in turnarounds, which will increase labor demand both during the spring and fall cycle. All of these are pulling on the same pool of workers. So that's why the workforce development right now is probably more important than ever. So we'll go ahead and start the discussion. And just like one question to start with, and then we'll see where it leads, is where do you feel most of the workers come from, and what reasons do you feel most impact your ability to attract workers? And we'll go ahead and start with Craig on that, if we could.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. East Harris County Manufacturers Association, in partnership recently with the Construction Labor Market Analyzer, usually referred to as CLMA, did a survey of our owners as well as the contractors in the area. And for operators and engineering vacancies, we found that, you know, about 58%, let's call it 60, came from other companies in the petrochem industry, and about 30% came from contractors at our facilities. About another, 8 or 9% came from another facility within the same company. We had about 5 or 6% that came from universities. And then, the rest were from outside the industry and military service veterans. Brandon can probably speak a little more about the survey on the construction side, but, you know, just rough numbers, we had about 40% that come into the industry with a high school or a GED. 20% come from community colleges with not construction related. You know, we've got a mix in there of trade school, and then we've got a mix in there with the apprenticeship programs that are internal to a lot of the construction companies.
And Mark, this is Brandon. You know, Craig's right. And demographically, what we're seeing on the craft workers is a lot of family, a lot of second generation or nephews or nieces or cousins that are getting brought in. And so there's still a lot of, in an industry as big and dynamic as this one is, the recruiting, unfortunately, is still a lot of word of mouth. And, you know, Houston is the biggest recruiting area, I would say South and Southeast Houston and Pasadena for the industrial crafts in the United States. You've got another fairly large group in the between Baton Rouge and New Orleans and the river parishes and in smaller enclaves in Freeport and in Corpus Christi and in the Brownsville area. But really right now we've got an issue in that most of the people coming into this industry are second, third generation, are somehow related to the industry. And we're working on solutions to the problem to bring in other people who are not related to the industry by going into high schools, going into middle schools and doing training there. But it's definitely an uphill battle. There's a stigma on the industry that we're trying to combat every day as far as, you know, low paid, dirty, dangerous work that we're trying to, you know, go out and tell the true story of a high pay, rewarding career. Safety has gotten better in tremendous strides since the 70s to today. And to tell that story to guidance counselors and parents to tell their children that, hey, this is an opportunity. If you don't want to go to college or if you don't like going to college, but you want to work with your hands and you can't be a dummy. There's some math skills. There's a lot of skills that you need to get these jobs, but we can teach and train and bring people in outside of the kind of family units that have dominated the industry, I think, for the last several decades.
You know, Mark, we're seeing a lot of those same things that Brandon mentions at San Jacinto College. We have about 32,000 students at the college, and we get a chance to talk to a lot of those students, and it's interesting how the majority of those students are drawn to the industry. Exactly what Brandon said, heritage. They have family or relatives that work directly in the industry. And so what we've really tried to do over the last few years is to get the word out to kind of the greater Houston area, the entire Gulf Coast, of all of the opportunities that Craig had mentioned earlier within a petrochemical site. These are all global companies. They've got a very global outreach. They make many products. They bring a lot of value and economy to the region. And they have a broad array of different types of opportunities to work at that site. And their career opportunities. In the years that I was a plant manager, I can't tell you the number of times that someone started out in an operator or a beginning position in a plant. And over the years, because of experience and knowledge, grew into a position of leadership and often geographically moved from that location to be a leader within that company, maybe in an area that was significantly different than what they started in, because there's a big engineering, supply chain, sales, finance. There's so many opportunities within this petrochemical industry.
Yeah, I would add that what Brandon and Jim said, that not only is there that opportunity and that a lot of our employees are heritage family employees, but as we go forward in the growth and expansion of the industry, we realize that we have to expand our pools from which we get and train employees, because that family legacy, although important to us and enriching, is not gonna feed the entire demand.
Well, that's exactly right in that it's not going to feed the entire demand. And, you know, if we look at the workforce as it sits now, within 15 years, we're expecting 40% of industrial craft workers and 45% of construction professionals to retire. And, you know, in 2002, according to CLMA, about 2.9% of the workforce was 16 to 19 years old. In 2017, that number had dropped to 1.8%. So we're not getting the replacement levels that we need. And frankly, we need more than replacement, because we're looking at a surge in demand in the petrochem industry that was frankly unheard of as recently as 5 or 6 years ago. So it is definitely almost to crisis level proportions that we need to not only replace this retiring workforce, but scale up, by an order of magnitude in the next 15 years.
Right. I think Brandon brings up a real good point. 5 or 6 years ago, it looked different 5 or 6 years ago. When you operate a petrochemical plant, your number one cost is feedstock, and it looked different 5 or 6 years ago. Today, the Gulf Coast is the place to build plants, and there's so much growth. Craig knows the numbers much better than I do, but tens of billions of dollars committed to new capital within these sites, and that capital brings along a lot of jobs, not just to operate the plant, but to construct and maintain these mega facilities that you're seeing along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, Jim,
it definitely is a concern. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, just to throw some of those numbers in that Jim referred to, there's approximately $70 billion with a B in announced projects here on the Gulf Coast, and those are in the majority linked to the inexpensive feedstock that Jim mentioned. And not only do we have to build those facilities, and that's where the construction labor demand is, but later on we have to, with a smaller population of workers, of course, and maybe a little different population of workers, have to maintain them and operate them. So that demand is significant over the next 5 to 10 years.
Has the great crew change or the graying of the workforce means that you have to reach down to millennials and other younger folks? Are there cultural issues that impact this reach?
So Mark, I happen to be a millennial at the upper edge of that demographic, and also just recently finished serving a term as ABC's National Young Professionals Committee Chair. And so I've had a chance to go around the country over the last 4 or 5 years speaking to groups, both of millennials and Gen Xers and boomers, about that demographic shift. And, I think at the end of the day, the millennials were a boogeyman as we were coming into the industry, because there was all this demographic data that, we would jump jobs, jump for a quarter, and there was no loyalty. And there was some truth to that. But I think part of that was for a desire for better working conditions and for a work-life balance that hadn't been in the industry. Although I think as a whole, that's probably made the industry a little better in the long run. But at the end of the day, what we're seeing now, that the millennials are really fully integrated into the workforce. The youngest in that cohort are now 25 years old. They're for the most part out of college. They're in the workforce. And we're seeing that they're motivated really by the same thing that the boomers and the Gen Xers were motivated by. And, one thing I've said to a lot of groups of older professionals as we talk about this shift is, in the 1960s and the 1970s, the World War I and World War II vets were looking at the boomers and saying, look at these hippie kids in San Francisco smoking joints and putting flowers in their hair. And they turned out to build a pretty awesome industry for us and are leaving us a pretty solid legacy for us to continue to build on. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to be the same thing with the millennials. And even now, as we look at Generation Z or the post-millennials or whatever catchy name they're going to wind up getting, you're seeing a trend in that cohort to say, I'm not going to college. I'm going to go to trade school. I'm going to use the opportunities that are afforded to me to not go heavily into debt and to build a career. And so we've kind of come full circle. So I think there's a lot of positivity in the next wave coming into the industry for craft workers and for construction professionals to continue to build the industry. So I think there was a lot of concern, but in the long run, I think we can work through the issues with the demographical differences in the age ranges.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. This is Jim, and as Brandon described that, I couldn't help but have a smile on my face. I've got to recognize that I have twin daughters that are millennials, and they might listen to this podcast, so I've got to be very appropriate with this discussion, and obviously I'm in a college that is filled with millennials. Let me say a couple of observations. I am really impressed with the students that we're training up today, how quickly they get at information and the excellent questions that they ask and the interest that they have in the industry. Many of these graduates know so much more about the petrochemical industry than I did when I came out of university. I think back when I walked into my first petrochemical plant, I was pretty green. Today, they have much more access to information. They ask better questions. On the other side of that, you know, I'm a boomer. So, I grew up as a mechanic with my father, and there's just not those opportunities today. So, you know, I think that's part of our training program is to give more hands-on and more understanding of those mechanics and recognize that it's a workforce that has stronger skills in some areas and needs a little bit more training and support in areas that, we're more generational.
What do you feel has been some of the most successful means that you have utilized to draw workers into the workforce?
Well, I'll jump in there first, because one of the things that ECMA has been very active with is creating a website that is friendly for access to the understanding of the jobs that are available, as well as the training necessary to acquire those jobs. And I really want to tip my hat to our partners here at the community colleges, specifically San Jacinto College, and then at the Associated Building Contractors and the Construction Maintenance Education Foundation, both of which have been strong contributors to the petrochemworks.com website that we use very heavily, and we think it's had a significant impact on providing a resource to potential employees and students out there, because it not only describes the jobs that are available, but the necessary skills that are needed to get those jobs, and provides a matching tool that, you know, says what your existing skills are and how well they are matched to each job, and then refers them for those gaps to the amount of training that they will need. And that training can be acquired at, you know, your neighborhood community college or through the Associated Building Contractors and Construction Maintenance Education Foundation training programs. So we think that's been a good asset to put in place for understanding as well as attracting employees to the field.
Craig. Absolutely, Craig. I think that website is very powerful. I've seen a lot of young professionals and people looking to get in the industry use that website. ECMA could not have been a better partner with the community colleges. In fact, the project that we're on, this new center, which will open in about 5 months, we've had about 120 different employees from different ECMA plants help us construct and design. And in addition to that, the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region has a focus on workforce, and last year met with nearly 10,000 students out in the area to talk to them about opportunities within petrochemical and energy, the growth, the career opportunities, and how to get started in that industry. So I think that partnership with the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region has been very strong.
One other aspect that, you know, Craig's talked about the Construction Maintenance and Education Foundation. Back in 2011, House Bill 5 passed, which changed the rules for how you could achieve a diploma in the state of Texas and really opened the door for vocational training and students in high schools to still get that high school diploma while doing vocational training. And since then, that law was passed in 2011, went into effect in 2012. In 2012, CMEF had three high schools that we were partnered with. As of this podcast, we're up to 66 high schools in the greater Houston area where we reach 6,500 students every year and teach them some aspect of vocational training. In some high school districts, that's a very minimum introduction of safety and basics of construction. In some high schools, that's advanced welding, pipe fitting, carpentry. And through that, we're able to bring a lot more people into the industry and a lot of people that aren't that second generation that can come in and get credits while they're in school. But the most important part of all of that is to have a credential in the NCCER credential that can travel from company to company and can be built upon, because at the end of the day, our workforce is very transient. Depending on what construction company gets the jobs is going to be where the workforce goes. And so a worker who's working for my company for performance today may be working for a competitor of mine in 6 months. And with our community-based training model that ECMA and ABC and CMEF and the community colleges are all working on together, that employee can get training with my company and then move on to the next company, have that training very quickly verified, and then build on that training and continue and not have to restart and not have to retrain, because we as an industry have all agreed on what an acceptable certification level is. And so that's been a huge part in growing the industry. And that's why I think, and I believe Craig and Jim would agree, that the community-based model of training is so important for the future of our workforce development, to be able to continue and to be able to meet the needs of the 70 billion plus in announced projects and probably double that in unannounced projects over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, Brandon, that's spot on. Absolutely. So as Craig mentioned earlier, there's about 130 plants locally, 90 different companies. And it's critical that when there's a project at Dow Chemical and it's coming to close, and now there's a big project starting at Shell or Lubrizol or Carrara, any one of the partners out here, is that that workforce can transition to that new site. And it's a community-based training. And you mentioned CMEF, Construction Maintenance Education Foundation. We're very proud to say that they're going to office with us at our new Center for Petrochemical Energy and Technology. And there's so much collaboration that just needs to be seamless. We're all one team here, and that workforce, especially on the construction maintenance side, needs to be able to transition seamlessly between these plants. And when we do that, it increases the economy, it increases the jobs, and it also allows more capital to come here because it reduces the cost of this construction.
That's an important issue, because if you look at these projects, there is a very real possibility, if we don't solve this issue and we don't get the workforce, that you're going to see more and more construction man hours sent offshore or overseas through module building. And so right now we have a pretty big issue where, these construction hours, if they get offshore, if we do see more and more modules and man hours moved overseas, that, you know, we're going to have less demand. We're going to have less of these high paying jobs, and we're going to have a issue with the whole national economy, not just here in the local area.
Yeah, Mark, I think you've heard the passion from all of us on getting it right here in the Gulf Coast. And I would just emphasize that the strength and the promise of getting things right here in the Gulf Coast is what you've heard. It's that fundamental, significant, and open communication about what we all need and how to get there, the training, the recruitment, all of that lining up. And then each one of our partners willing to adapt to that data that's heard and then make significant changes to meet those needs. The results in this region of that cooperation speak for themselves. They're incredibly strong. We've made incredible strides toward meeting these demands, and we'll continue because the cooperation is there.
That is all the time we have for today. We will continue this topic on our next episode of BIC Magazine's Industry Roundtable. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time and insight. I want to thank you as well for downloading today's episode. Be sure to follow us on social media for program updates and log on to BICMagazine.com for the latest industry news and events. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.
The conversation will continue on the next podcast. Follow us on social media and log on to BICMagazine.com for show updates. Thank you for downloading this episode of BIC Magazine's Industry Roundtable, the leader in connecting the energy industry.